Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome back to an adventure in history. It's just the two of us.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
And you, we didn't talk about it last time, but yeah. You did the Great Columbia Crossing.
I did.
With a multitude of children.
Three little Quilas, Carly, Alma, and Charlie, ages 7, 9, and 10, did it for the first, well, Alma actually did it, Renee reminded me, when she was like 1 month old.
Well, she didn't walk it.
So. 1 month. Can you imagine?
So tell me this, stroller or carrying?
She did a stroller.
Okay.
And she says in hindsight, she just was like, she didn't even know what she was doing.
See, a stroller strikes me as there would have been the one time that I did it. Way too many people around for a stroller.
Right.
Unless you like let everybody go ahead of you.
Yes. And she's a fast walker. But yes, this is her first time. They did fabulous. They were great. They were so, so proud of themselves. And we were most concerned about the wait, right?
Yes.
It's like, oh, guess what? You get to get up at 5:45 in the morning and then you wait several hours. But they did fine. And they knew lots of other kids, surprisingly, and then teachers and all
interesting
sorts of fun things. Yeah.
See, the time I did it way back, I think it was the one that you actually organized when you worked at the chamber.
One of them.
I don't really remember a lot of children.
I don't either. And I don't think it was encouraged as much either. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was still free then, which it is free for kids to do it, which I think is very generous. They get clam bucks too. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a kid event because I mean, it's a like you and I were just talking off air. There's a long way from point A to point B with there's no turning back.
Yeah.
There's no like, oh, just, you know, hop on a bus.
Change
or hop
my
on
mind.
A, yeah. Nope. You got to go all the way across. But they were great. They did great. They came in 20 minutes ahead of us.
Wow.
They had a pace of like a 12-minute mile. And that was what they stop on the bridge. And they did take advantage of the one bathroom that was on the bridge. Mm-hmm. But 12-minute mile for, 7 to 10-year-old.
Yeah. That's tremendous.
It was a little slower than that.
Wow. And it was very foggy.
It was a very foggy, beautiful day, though. But yeah, completely socked in the whole way. Couldn't see the river up at the top of the dress.
So for all you knew, you were just 10 feet above the river.
Exactly. It was just nothing.
Except for that huge incline walking up.
Yeah. So yeah, you still feel the incline. Yeah.
So I didn't feel until afterwards going down.
Yes.
The other side is where you really, to me, feel it.
Right. I feel like that, too. I mean, maybe is it a steeper slope going down or you're just like exhausted
I think you're exhausted. You're so in that up mode that all of a sudden now your legs and your back and your feet are the other direction. So,
and the part that always gets me too, and at this point too, so we truly stepped off the bridge. The kids crossed the finish line and we still had a mile to go.
Wow.
So Mark was at the finish line, so he was there greeting them. But that, I feel like that last mile is just such a downer. It's like, oh, you could
literally
see it.
Down.
Yes. But tons of funny signs. And that's where they have all their kind of goofy cheerleaders saying funny things too.
Excellent.
So it was good.
So once again, well done. A story of Washington Chamber of Commerce.
Good job.
All right. So we've got this weekend Talking Tombstones out at Greenwood Cemetery on Sunday.
Oh, yes.
It's always the last Sunday in October. So October 27th at Greenwood Cemetery out past River Point. It's my favorite cemetery and some great stories. So you should plan on being there about 1.
Okay.
And you should carpool if possible because it is kind of a little on the difficult side of parking.
Okay. And remind me how it works because you go in small groups,
small
right?
Small groups. So. We take people around. Picture it like a merry-go-round. We have 10 horses or 10 people from the past.
Yep.
And we send groups of about 15 to 20 out. So once, if you don't get there at like 1 o'clock, we get all those 10 our performers are performing for 10 different groups. And then you got to wait till everybody's rotated through. So if you don't get there at like 1, I recommend you show up like 3-ish.
Okay.
Because that people, once we get the place full, if you picture 10 actors, each one going 5 to 10 minutes, that's an hour plus before group 1 is done seeing everybody.
Got it.
So we always get a bit of a line and I do a little bit of a dog and pony show, and we have candy, but it's still potentially at 1:30-ish to like 2:30-ish. There's a bit of a wait.
Okay.
So.
And it's rain or shine.
Rain or shine.
Yeah.
Greenwood has been cold.
Okay.
It has been cold and windy.
I mean, it's all the more spooky, right? If it's kind of rainy and it all goes on and great. And this year's theme. I loved the theme.
A grave mistake. Or grave mistakes. I can't remember which one we did.
That's so good.
Because we started the second year with like Son of or Return of, and they were just little subtitles just to make me laugh, basically. But now we always subtitle them.
Yeah, this one's great. A grave mistake. Good.
All right, you got a word for me?
I do have a word. Okay, this one's a noun. Alatriophagy.
Oh, I used this yesterday when I was writing up. No, I have no idea.
So look at the word. I mean, you can't, not that you can read. It's a huge word.
It is a huge word.
Yeah.
It's a noun?
It's a noun.
Say it one more time or attempt to say it one more time.
Alatriophagy.
I believe that is a fear of trees hugging you.
Ooh, nope, not even close. This one's a strong urge or desire to eat food that is abnormal or unhealthy.
Oh, I love Cheetos.
I know. So, I mean, there's so many easier ways to say this.
Yes.
So I think that we're going to keep this one retired.
Yeah, that one's not coming back.
Since I can't even say it.
All right. So the history highlights, these are things that happened tomorrow. I don't have a big long list here. It's kind of short. Apparently nothing happened on tomorrow, October 21st.
Okay.
Very few things. 1797, the USS Constitution is launched in Boston, Old Ironsides. It is the oldest ship that is still in our Navy.
Oh, okay.
It is still commissioned.
It is.
In our Navy.
It's a museum, right?
It goes out and about.
Okay.
It came here in the 1930s, because Westport, the mill at Westport, it needed new masts, and we made the masts for them. So they came out here as a thank you.
Oh.
They sailed the thing out here.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Quite a trip.
1805, speaking of battleships, the Battle of Trafalgar. The British Admiral Horatio Nelson defeats the combined French and Spanish fleet. I like how they word that, like he did it.
Right. Yes.
By himself, just him taking on
the
whole.
This is how history is written, Mac.
But he is also, Nelson is shot and killed during the battle.
Oh.
1917, the first Americans to see action on the front lines of World War I. U.S. troops enter the front lines at Sommervilliers, I don't know how to say that, under French command. So 1959, the Guggenheim Museum opens in New York City.
Oh, nice.
Have you ever been?
I have not.
No, we've discussed this. Have you been to New York City?
I have not.
That's right.
Right.
Wow.
So Guggenheim.
The Guggenheim.
Am I adding that to my list of places to go?
I've actually never been to the Guggenheim.
Okay.
I've been past it.
The name itself sounds fun.
It is fun to say. 1975, the Coast Guard Academy first allows women to enroll.
Ooh.
1975.
No, I was like, 75? What happened then? Okay. Well, a little late to the party there.
Yeah, I don't know. I was about to say Jimmy Carter, but 75.
Yeah.
Gerald Ford.
Okay. Yeah, so, good for him.
But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history, 1520.
Whoa.
Explorer Ferdinand Magellan. And his fleet reached Cape Vergines. I'm sure I'm not saying that right either. After transiting the Magellan Strait between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, becoming the first Europeans to sail into the Pacific. It's amazing that it's the Strait. He's named Magellan, and he goes through the Magellan Strait.
I was going to say the same thing. Oh, and what a coincidence.
So, yeah, we both have the same stupid sense of humor.
I know. What is it, though, about naming things after yourself? I mean,
it does seem odd.
I don't know.
I don't feel that desire.
I'm not a huge fan, and I'm very blatantly sexist because things are mostly named after men for this reason.
Yes.
But I just wonder, would women go about and be like, oh,
if the women were the explorers way back?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you also don't hear about women naming their daughters after themselves either, whereas men often...
I don't understand.
Again, very generalized sexist statement. I'm out there.
I like paying homage in terms of naming an offspring, using the middle name.
Oh, sure.
Something like that.
I did that for my kids.
Like my middle name is actually my mother's maiden name.
Oh, what is that?
Ford.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Okay.
Ford. The correct spelling.
Oh, of course. Yes.
But it's just, to me, it's a nice homage to both sides of the family.
Yes.
So
I agree.
But yeah, I don't know. See, is it the men being men and naming these things, the Magellan Strait, Or would it just be the mentality of I'm an explorer? So if Magellan had been a woman instead of a man, a lot of the same attributes, I would assume, if you're willing to get on a ship and circumnavigate the globe right. in this time period.
And in this probably, time period, it would be if you're allowed to yes. get on a ship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's probably some
right.
some derring do and arrogance and ego.
Well, maybe we can look it up. It also might just be a simple of, you know, that's just how it was done, right? For navigation purposes and tracking purposes.
Oh, I think there's ego involved. Or there's naming after, you know, king and country, that kind of thing.
That's true, yes. So,
I mean, look at Columbia River, everything on the Columbia River, basically. So
yes.
Okay, but totally no segue to this.
Nope, that's okay, though.
But we're going to talk a little bit about manners
yes.
and etiquette.
Okay.
In the day, because one of the things at the Flavel House, when you buy your ticket at the carriage house, we actually give you a calling card. Ooh. And we get to explain what calling cards are to visitors, and half don't care and the other half are charmed.
Okay.
So this was actually put together by a writer named Lauren Kirkbride that I found. So we're just going to randomly talk about some of these things.
Okay.
Hats off for the ladies. Many classrooms today ask that people take off their hats indoors or during the national anthem. I like at the Elks Club here in Astoria, there's a sign that says, please remove your hats when you come in.
Oh, okay.
And I like that. I don't know why, but I like that. In the mid-20th century, however, men were expected to take off their hats in the presence of women. Should a man enter a room or space and see a woman, he would take off his hat. Women did not receive the same level of scrutiny. They could keep their hats on unless they interfered with someone's work or view. While the hats off etiquette is still practiced today, the guidelines are different. It depends on the event rather than the gender of the crowd.
Yeah.
I like that if you're a lady yeah. and wearing a big hat in front of me in the theater, you have to take it off.
You have to take it off. But if not, you know, yeah, don't mess up that hair. Okay. So calling cards, as you were mentioning, in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, guests would leave calling cards in a tray near the front door. Calling cards, also called visiting cards, were small letters used to express appreciation, offer condolences, or say hello. These cards came with their own strict etiquette rules. Women were expected to give and receive calling cards, even on behalf of their husbands. Giving a calling card at the scheduled time during the morning or afternoon would eventually grant you a calling card in return. Folding certain corners on the page would communicate different things, such as condolence or congratulations.
Okay, so in the same time period, because people came west and you've got relatives back east and communication might take months and you may not talk to people for years. Or correspond with them. It might take forever. So if somebody died back in this time period and you were sending like, hey, Aunt Susie died, you would put that in an envelope, but then you would make the entire envelope have a black border. Oh. So when you got the envelope, you knew it was bad news, but you don't know who.
Right.
So how do we feel about that?
Oh, that's awful. Like my heart hurts just thinking about that. Yeah.
See, I don't know if it's a good, like, okay, be prepared.
It's a warning.
Somebody,
right?
Like 2 years ago, you left and Grandpa wasn't doing well, but neither was Aunt Susan. Or if it's just like, oh, it's going to be happy news. They're going to talk about Billy right. graduated from high school. And then you rip this thing open and somebody died. Oh. So I don't know which is better, to yeah, have that warning.
I guess neither one. So it was right. this sort of like, I mean, this is when they visited, though.
Yes.
So it was also like a tracking purposes,
yes.
right?
So I knew who had visited me. I'm keeping track. Did they?
And was it a thing to like have more calling cards?
So I don't know if it's a collector's thing, but it's certainly a point of pride that look okay. at 28 callers visited us.
And then you'd keep it out so other people would
see
them.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Nice.
So young women could not go alone to different events.
Sure.
For parties, dinners, and theater engagements. Single women had to be chaperoned, usually their mother, older brother, that makes me laugh, or another married lady would escort them into the event. If none of these figures were available, the hostess would act as a chaperone to bring the young lady in. Etiquette permitted girls to escort themselves to luncheons or afternoon tea, even sitting alone if she wished. But evening events required young ladies to have a chaperone and married women to enter with their husbands or with a group.
Because what trouble could they get into without that escort?
Oh, that's right. Exactly.
Because men didn't make those same poor choices.
No, of course not.
All right.
Men were utterly well-behaved.
Sure. Visiting hours. Morning calls were informal visits where people could drop off calling cards or chat. These visits, often considered mandatory in certain occasions, had to occur between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m., earlier calls could interrupt breakfast or a woman's household chores, and later visits would suggest a pushy attempt at securing a dinner invite.
I like that one. If I show up at 4 o'clock, it's really just a hint that why not just stay for dinner?
Right. Yeah, that could go for today, too. Morning calls usually remain short, 15 to 30 minutes. Men could take calls in the business room or library while women took them in the morning room or drawing room. Pets and children did not participate as they could end up being annoying.
I wonder if they wait outside.
Did you add that, Mac?
I did not. I wonder if they like wait outside or you just leave them at home.
That's the children can be seen but not heard era.
Good gracious was a swear word.
Ooh.
In 1883, Walter R. Houghton covered the basics of etiquette in his book, American Etiquette and Rules of Politeness. As with any etiquette book, Houghton advised against foul language, but his definition of strong language included the dickens.
Oh, wow.
The dickens, you say? Mercy and good gracious. I use good gracious every day.
I was going to say, I say that one.
If you are surprised or astonished, suppress the fact, Houghton writes. Such expressions border closely on profanity. Other offensive expressions of surprise that Houghton didn't provide include doggone, by gum, because that's similar to by God, and cripes.
That's so funny. Oh, if he were to be alive today.
Oh, my. Good gracious, if he was alive
right?
today.
Singing on demand. In the early 1900s, most households did not yet have home radios. So to entertain family and guests, they would sing or play instruments. If a person were asked to play, it was considered a mark of vanity to show anxiety or hesitation. Waiting to be urged or make a decision would label one as rude. A person could turn down the request to entertain, but to remain polite, they had to refuse sternly and immediately. On top of that, if a guest performed, a host was expected to ask them again later the same evening so they would not feel underappreciated.
Now, see, I like that. Because when you sing horribly and the whole room is like, oh, my good gracious, oh, my goodness, then you feel badly, but now we're going to ask you to sing again, which shows, oh, they really did like it.
Oh, that's terrible, though.
But I like the, I have to refuse quickly and sternly.
I like that. Yeah, just
rather than the hemming and hawing and being polite about it. Well, I don't know. Yes. I don't know that everybody, just no, no thank you.
Yes, give me a yes or no.
Yep. No marriage after 3 p.m.
Ooh.
Before the 1880s, marriage ceremonies were always held between 8 a.m. and 12 p.m. Legally, the state, many states, required those marriage times until 1886. As the 19th century rapidly approached, the time was extended to 3 p.m. These hours had to do with the working schedule at the time. Many workers only received half a day off on Saturdays and Sundays, when most weddings were held. The celebration was expected to occur when most guests would be available. If it happened later, it would shape the couple as rude.
Ooh, so we had a 2 p.m. What time was yours?
Mine was 3:05.
Oh.
No. It was probably like 1 o'clock.
Right. Early afternoon. Yeah.
Early afternoon.
Okay. Fetch my horse. Before automobiles extended to the masses around 1908, most people traveled by horse. Should a couple decide to ride, the man had to choose the lady's horse. On top of that, he had to carefully select the right horse, one with a secure saddle and gentle temper that the woman could easily manage. It was also considered impolite to keep a woman waiting too long in her riding costume. So the man had to pick the horse both quickly and correctly. If the horse turned out wrong, it would reflect poorly on his judgments.
See, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but
I have to choose the right horse, make sure it's all secure.
Yeah, I don't. I kind of like this one. You know, it had to go with a something that a woman could easily manage, a gentle temper. I like that.
And are you a horse rider?
No.
I have not been on a horse since my friend's eighth birthday party, not eighth grade, eighth. I was thrown from the horse, and I never got on the horse again.
Oh, you're supposed to get back up and ride that horse.
I know, but I did not. I was frightened by that horse.
Okay.
Speaking of horses, even after cars rose in popularity during the early 20th century, many people still chose to ride in carriages. If a man and a woman rode together, they had an unspoken rule that the man would sit with his back to the horse. That way, the horse would not pass gas onto the lady's hair.
I love that.
Some even believe that a man's larger hat would dispel the vapors back at the driver. Of course, this rule remained unspoken between the pair.
That's
I don't know that great. I believe that one.
Yeah, that's a good one, though.
But it is funny.
No punny business. In classy settings, people used to refrain from witticisms because they believed that they eventually spiraled into vulgarity. Walter Houghton counsels against making puns. He put the phrase in quotes. And bringing antidotes into the conversation. It was also considered rude to dominate the discussion with one topic. No matter how much that idea interested you or the group, subjects of conversation flipped quickly in the late 19th century in an attempt to include everyone.
See, I wonder what length of conversation on a topic, if the entire group, if it's one guy just talking and everyone else is just saying, then okay, you're dominating the conversation, nobody's interested. But if the entire group is talking about it.
Right, or if it's the topic of the reason that you came.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
So I'm confused on that one. I worked with a guy named, his last name was Solberg, years and years ago, and he postulated, and we called it the Solberg 7-minute lull. He decided that any group of people having a conversation, it was 7 minutes and the topic was kind of over, and there was a lull, and then you find a new topic.
Okay. So. All right. Well, okay.
Steve, I still use that 30 years later. All right. Gifts should be gendered. Gifts used to reflect more on the person giving than whom they were given to. If a woman offered a present, it was expected to appear ladylike, dainty, and of a delicate nature. The gift would demonstrate the woman's taste in art and fashion. If a married woman gave a gift, she would have to provide it in the name of both her and her husband, especially if the present went to another man or couple. Couple and family gift giving is still practiced today, although the presents themselves don't have to be appear ladylike.
Oh, thank goodness.
But I like that it has to reflect more on me, the gift giver, than who I'm actually giving it to.
Because all women are ladylike.
Ladylike.
Whatever that means. No sightseeing. When walking through the streets, those in the Victorian era would prevent full-on eye contact, especially men and women. Glancing around at your surroundings was considered rude, particularly in neighborhoods where residents might think you're peering into their home. If a man saw an acquaintance looking out a window, he would bow to them, but not to strangers on the street. Victorian men and women were advised to look forward in the direction they were walking. Even watching their feet was labeled bad manners.
That seems a little unsafe.
Yes, it does. And what about just being like friendly? Hi, how's it going?
Have a great day.
Yeah.
All right, this one's just gross. Off your moles, those unsightly blemishes. For a long time, people removed their moles through a disturbing method. The person would moisten a stick of silver nitrate and press it to the mole. The moles would blacken, shrivel, and eventually fall off. The method mirrors how many doctors remove warts today, except they use different chemicals. Some moles would require several applications of this process to finally fall off. If this still didn't work, the person would visit a surgeon. In particular, moles on the face were seen as a significant disfigurement necessary to get rid of.
Oh, that sounds awful.
That does sound awful.
And I'm sure that silver nitrate did nothing. I'm sure it was not harmful to your skin or anything.
Yes, I'm sure it was very pleasant.
Smoking restrictions were worse than an airport. Smokers in the early 20th century followed unspoken rules on where and when to smoke. Men in particular could not smoke while accompanying a woman or in a room where a lady enters. They could not smoke while bowing and always had to ask before lighting the cigar. Both women and men could not smoke during the day. They could smoke like a burglary after dark, but not before. Most public spaces did not allow smoking, so people had to find an indoor area that allowed cigars. These did not include theaters, carriages, or churches.
Stunning.
Yeah. And then we sort of went backwards, and now we're getting back to that.
Wild West. All right. If related to the host, dance with every single lady.
Ooh.
Hosts and hostesses did not carry the sole burden on their ball in the late 19th century. According to the Gentleman's Book of Etiquette and Manual of Politeness, male relatives of the hosts would see that every lady, young or old, handsome or ugly, is provided with a partner, though the oldest and ugliest may fall to your own share.
Hmm.
Now, that was all in quotes, by the way. Since men were counseled not to dance over three times with the same woman, that granted them plenty of time to dance with everyone. Gentlemen also paid attention to the wallflowers, since only men could initiate the dance.
Right, and I'm sure women probably couldn't say no. Don't escort a girl home. Contrary to today's etiquette, men in the Victorian era did not escort women back to their homes. If they offered, she would likely refuse. Men also waited long enough to say farewell to all the ladies, but not long enough to be the last to leave, which was considered untoward. As the 1857 Etiquette for Gentlemen put it, at a public ball, it is exceptional for a gentleman to offer to escort a lady home. She is pretty sure to refuse unless blank. But we need not supply that blank.
Oh, my.
Oh, my goodness.
That was in the Book of Etiquette?
I didn't know where that was going.
Yeah, that's implying something that I'm surprised at. All right, women didn't stand to say hello. When someone introduces you, the typical response nowadays is to stand up and shake the hand of the person you're meeting. 100 years ago, that rule only applied to men. In most circumstances, a woman would not stand up to shake the hand of another. She would remain seated as her husband or father indicated to guests who she was.
On that note.
I wonder if they waved or smiled or nodded.
Or nodded. But female handshakes were done in a princess-like fashion. Another greeting that was unique to women in the past is the princess-like handshake. This means that a woman would extend her hand so that it flopped forward rather than holding it erect to one side. Small details like this were symbolic of a woman's submissiveness compared to a man's assertiveness. Even today, you can tell how confident someone is based on how strong and steady their handshake feels. Back then, a woman didn't want to come off too strong-headed or she would threaten the man's authority.
Oh, say it isn't so. All right, kissing a lady's hand isn't what it used to be. You've probably seen an oldie-timey movie where a woman blushed as a gentleman pecked the top of her hand. This was common practice back in the day and a way to show respect. Men did have one rule back then when it came to hand kissing, only do it to married women. It may seem backwards, but it makes sense if you consider that single women were more vulnerable in those times. Nowadays, hand kissing is still common in some areas, but many find it overly formal or creepy, especially if it is someone you hardly know. So Larry Zeke, the passed away, that was our custodian for 15 years at the Historical Society, I always had to warn new women employees because he liked to greet people by kissing the back of their hand.
Okay.
And I said, he's not being creepy. He's not being, he thinks it's charming. It's old school. Yeah. And he's kind of an old school guy. And it was very funny because, like, especially younger women, when I warned them, they'd kind of be like, what? Really? What? And then when he did it, they laugh later. They're like, he did. Oh. You were right. He grabbed my hand and kissed the back of it.
Endearing. So when I lived,
it was very endearing.
When I lived in South Florida, a custom greeting is to kiss the person's cheek. Mm-hmm. It's a very, you know, Cuban influence. But it's men and women, men and men, and women and women. And mm-hmm. I came to love it. I mean, mm-hmm. it just because it was like everyone that you met that you knew, of course, yes. You have to know them. But it was, you know, it was kind of sweet. So we could bring that one back.
Okay. I think we should bring this one back too.
Okay.
Return containers filled with food. Oh. One kind gesture that has been around for centuries is the act of giving someone a home-cooked meal in a time of need. However, there's one caveat that used to exist that doesn't anymore. You had to return the dish filled with food.
Oh, I love
that. You were basically giving a loan in the form of food and the debt was due back as soon as you returned the dish. Nowadays, of course, it's considered more polite to give someone food in a dish they can keep rather than expecting anything in return.
Oh, I didn't know.
Isn't that kind of fun?
Yes, I love that.
Although it is a debt, but I wonder if you have to give equal amount of food or like if somebody gives you a casserole, do you have to make them a casserole or Right. Could you just fill it with carrots?
Right. No carrots, please. I love that. Well, this was a fun
I
one.
I do. Yeah. All right. So don't forget about Talking Tombstones. We'll see you on Sunday. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.